Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for leading us in that time of worship. Where's the band gone? Disappeared over the back. So thank you very much for that. So, my name is Nicholas Keane, and I better get it in early. I'm the favourite son-in-law of my man-in-law over there. It's a standing joke in the family. I always put love, Nick. YFSIL, your favourite son-in-law. And she does reciprocate with your favourite mother-in-law as well. Occasionally it's your only mother-in-law. Yeah, praise the Lord for that. So, this morning I'm going to talk about Mission Aviation Fellowship, MAF, which has been, I gather from Anthony, something that you've been following and praying about and supporting for a while. So Anthony and I met at the Assemblies of God conference in Harrogate earlier this year, and there were 25 stands outside of the main hall, and MAF was one of them. And most people sort of sidle up and say, hello, yes, you're right, this, that and the other. No, Anthony bounded over. He was like a man he was a gazelle. He was like a man on a mission. He was going to come and wanted to seek us out. So I actually live with my wife, Polly. Give a wave, Polly. Thank you. We live in Cambridge. So it's a little bit outside of my patch, because there are about 80 of me, well, like me, speakers around the country that do MAF. And I have told the local chap that I've pinched his spot this morning. So, Mission Aviation Fellowship, what are we? Well, first and foremost, we're a Christian mission. Started after the war by an Englishman, an Australian, and an American. I've often thought there's a joke in there, but I've never really quite worked that one out. And they said, right, we've been given skills, we've been taught to fly, how do we use our skills for the benefit of mankind instead of war? And so MAF started. With biplanes. For those of you who know your aircraft, the de Havilland Dragonfly Rapide, a biplane, which if you go to Duxford, where I'm 3 miles from where I live, you can still fly in one from the 1930s. And they started with one aircraft. And over that time, they have built for 80 years. They have been serving the Lord, first and foremost. But secondly, what is our function? Well, it's very simple. We are an airline. Just like anything else, if you've ever flown in a jet or been in a commercial aircraft, it's an airline. That's what we are. We're a Christian airline. We also happen to be the largest humanitarian airline in the world. What do I mean by that? Basically, we go to places that nobody else does. We go to communities that are completely cut off. And as we'll see, when we say, do you live on the top of a mountain? Oh yes, they do. Miles from anywhere. We live in a very small island, sort of 700 miles from Land's End to John O'Groats. Well, start thinking of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of miles of nothing but natural habitat. It's a very difficult concept for the Brits to get in their mind unless you've travelled quite a bit. But that's where we do. So who do we carry? We carry people from non-governmental organisations. Churches, missions, governments, royal family. Only 2 months ago we flew the Princess Royal and her husband into Uganda. Didn't hit the headlines, nobody knew she was there, but quite there she was in her slacks as usual. And we fly the royals quite often in Africa. For example, and we fly these people to where they're needed. So for example, who here has heard of the Christian Vet Mission? Nope, that's what I expected. Nobody. So there is the Christian Vet Mission in Africa, who are obviously trained vets looking after stock. But what do they do while they're there? They talk about Jesus. They talk about the gospel. They try and save souls. And also in Madagascar, that huge island just to the right of India. Yeah, thank goodness for that. My friend Mark's here and he knows the world quite well, so I just look at him for a nod every now and again on my geography. Madagascar is an enormous island. and the capital sort of somewhere in the middle on the right, on the east coast. And once a month we fly a Malagasy pastor to the north of the island to a jail, to a prison, where he ministers once a month to the inmates. So it's this sort of incredibly varied thing that we get up to. Why? Because we're an airline. What do airlines do? They carry people and cargo from A to B and B to A and anywhere in between. Well, I should say A to Z and anywhere in between. So where do we do all this work? Well, the number of countries we fly in can vary where we're called. So for example, on this map, which is the latest one, we have 25 countries that we're going to tell you about or are prepared to make public. And there are another four that we don't tell you where we're in. Why? Because a lot of these countries that we're in are not Christian. A lot of the countries that we're in, we are flying people or organizations that do not wish to be identified that they're in the country. Not that they're doing anything illegal, but because they could potentially be a target. So we will tell you, they will come to us. Look, we fly with you regularly. For pity's sake, don't tell anybody where we are. So we don't. So there has to be a little bit of secrecy that goes on. A couple of years ago, you would have seen up here in Mongolia. We served in Mongolia. Now you have to be prepared as Christians to love the world like a dove, but be as wise as a snake. Why? Because in Mongolia, we wanted to change the aircraft over, and of course, it required paperwork. Unfortunately, somebody wanted a little bit of this. And so, we won't pay a bribe. Then you've also got in here, just to the right of India, you've got Bangladesh. And that was one of the first countries we went in. And we were there for about 70 odd years. Why aren't we there now? Well, part of the Chinese building of roads around the world in many, many countries, they've built an enormous road right across the middle of the country, so we're not needed anymore. So sometimes we're in, sometimes we're out. There are also other countries that we've been in. So one country we never told you we were in was, before all the forces pulled out, was in Afghanistan. So when there was an interim government that was pro-Western, we flew in, there's no pun intended in this, but under the radar, and we served the communities. Of course, as soon as the Taliban came in, Christian organization, no way. So we had to stop flying in there. And we do have our staff who are put in danger. There is a family called the Kolas. He was arrested in Mozambique, which is, if I remember correctly, somewhere around here, on a completely trumped up charge because the government is in absolute terror because of the terrorist forces coming down from the top. He was doing regular flights to missions and to children's homes, to orphanages, with pills and potions bought over the local pharmacy counter. They thought he was supplying the terrorists. So he, with three South Africans, were arrested, 7 months in a squalid jail, another 9 months before he got his passport back and came out. So our staff can be at risk. And over the history of MAF, they've been in areas where the bullets have been flying. Well, obviously, we don't carry anybody military, and we don't knowingly carry any guns, but we are at the touch point of danger. So who do we carry? We're an airline. Well, here is some of the logos. In the last rolling 12 months, we have carried representatives of about 1,500 charities from around the world. So you're going to recognize Save the Children. You'll probably know Shelter, UK Aid, Tear Fund, CAFOD, maybe even bottom right-hand corner, the Halo Trust, which Diana, Princess of Wales, made famous, and of course today is anniversary of her death. But there are going to be others in there, the Medical International Corps, International Medical Corps, my French is awful, Terre des Hommes, BRAC, And you'll never go, who are these? Well, we're an international airline. We fly around the world, which you saw by the previous map. And whilst we all think Britain is the centre of the world, of course it is, we work on the basis that actually there are a lot more people out there than we know about. And we come across them fairly often. So who does all the flying? Well, here we have four photos. The top left, there's the pilot. It's the lady pilot. How do I know she's the pilot? Because she's sitting in the left-hand seat. That's where pilots sit in aircraft. You sit in the left-hand seat. So she's the lady pilot. When you go on holiday these days, you probably go on the internet, but you used to go to a thing called a travel agent. And they'd go in and they'd book and do all the necessary things for your tickets and everything. Well, we have booking agents. Our aircraft are small. They might carry 9-12 people maximum. They all got one propeller at the front. So they're single engine piston aircraft, for those of you who are more technically minded. But we still have to book people on. We're a commercial airline. So we have to book them on. We have to do the weight and balance. So what that basically means is, do you remember when you were at school and you used to get really bored at the back of the lesson and you'd get your pen out or your pencil out and you just try and balance your pen on your finger, you know, like this. I can't do it now, but like that. And you just balance your pen and the teacher would say, Smith Minor, are you listening? Right, that's extra Latin vocab for you. So there you are. So basically, lift, are the wings big enough to lift the weight off the ground? And balance, does your aircraft have too much at the nose or too much at the tail? Now, happily, you don't have one point. You have a 4.5 datum point. So as long as it's between the two, then the aircraft will fly. More and more airlines, and don't be offended by this when you go to fly sometime, because of the size of people, moi, for example, more and more airlines are now weighing passengers because we're all getting bigger. An aircraft can only lift so much with their fuel and everything. So just a tip, in the future, scales, they're not being rude, they're actually having to do it for health and safety. But that's coming. By the way, I do know about this a bit. I am a pilot myself. I've never flown for MAF, but I do understand weight and balance. So what have we got at the bottom left-hand corner? We've got a gentleman working on the underside of a wing, all the mechanical bits, the levers, the hinges, the bolts, the nuts. And on the right, we have two gentlemen who are working on screens. Why? Because the aircraft we fly today are not beaten up old bangers. They're like this, if you can see this picture here. You see two pilots here, and in the middle, the best way to describe it is there are three TV screens. And I can tell you that's exactly what you'll find in any modern airliner. Exactly the same. Same equipment. So we don't fly old bangers. We might buy old aircraft. We might even buy aircraft that have crashed. But we completely strip them down to almost every individual nut, bolt and part. And then we rebuild them to how MAF likes to have them. Because obviously we're flying in places that are a bit rough, to say the least. And you're coming into land and you haven't spotted that there's a big boulder that's been exposed by the rain over the winter months and you hit that. Just imagine what would happen if you hit it in your car. Never mind travelling at about 80 miles an hour coming into land. So we have to build things that are incredibly robust. So who does all this work around the world? We've got about 1,350 staff around the world, of which 250 are expats and about 1,100 are locals. Now, a few years ago, it was 350 expats and about 1,000 locals. So you can see we're moving in a direction whereby where we want to get to is all the work. So all the pilots, all the radio operators, all the in-country ambassadors, all the finance managers, all the HR resource, all the engineers, they're all locals in their own country. But that's going to take a bit of time to get to, maybe 20 years. So why that long? The answer is education. And a lot of these countries, part of the answer is mortality. And the other part is money. So to give you an example, all our people get paid, and they get paid well, but they're not paid top dollar. But in this country, if you train to be an engineer, a mechanical engineer on an aircraft, once you've qualified, you'll easily be snapped up for £80,000-£100,000 a year, just like that. Now, we're not going to compete with the people. We need people who love the Lord, who are prepared to go out and be missionaries in pretty hostile environments. I mean, a lot of the places that they live, you are living in compounds, expat compounds, which you only get in and out through a locked gate, and there'll be guards on the wall because it's not a particularly safe environment to be living outside. You know, this isn't Britain, where you can walk down the street at night and probably won't get mugged. Out there, it can be a bit more of a risk. And the wives and the husbands, they all double with what they're doing. So here's a question for you. What percentage of the RAF flies? Somebody give me a figure.
10%.
10%. So use Bruce's card game. Okay, my loves, higher or lower?
Higher.
Well, give us a figure. I've got 10 as a starter.
Three.
2. 20.
One.
I pity the poor bloke who's won. The answer, I've got it over here. Several of you are very close. It's 2%. So 2% of the RAF personnel actually get off the ground. Now turn that round the other way, that means 98% of the RAF keep the 2% in the air. And that's no different to us. We have an enormous group of people who are forever keeping everybody in the air. So here you go. The country director in Papua New Guinea leads a team of 40 people doing all the bits that everybody needs to do. And I mentioned ago an in-country ambassador. What do we mean by that? Well, who here is familiar with the phrase schmoozing? Getting along, rubbing along with somebody, schmooze them. So an example, in Bangladesh, they fly the same aircraft that we do, Cessna Caravans. We've got about 50 of them. And one day they came over to our hangar and said, we've got a problem with the fuel flow. So our chaps went over and said, what's the problem? And they looked at it and they said, pointed at it and said, oh, try that. And of course it was fixed. So we didn't touch it. We didn't work on it. We just advised. Along comes their warrant officer. You got that fixed yet? Yeah. Those guys are maff. They come on. The warrant officer has to go to his wing commander or station commander. Have you got that fixed? Yeah, MAF. And then somebody from government will get involved. You got that thing working? Yeah, MAF. Ah, great. So all of a sudden, by doing a good turn on the ground, it'll filter all the way up to the top of government. Actually, MAF are all right. Schmoozing. You've got to rub along with them. You never go across your own standards and your own policy and your own rules. But you help where you can. Why? Because we're operating in countries, some of which are really pro us and some of which tolerate us. So you've got to be careful for your people. Mind you, I wouldn't want his job in a million years. The one factor that all these people have got is they're all Christians. After that, they all come from different countries, with different cultures, with different languages. Yeah, you try managing that lot. So, last year, what did we do? We flew 6.1 million kilometres. Well, what on earth does that mean in English? It does say it there. For those of you who can remember at school looking at an atlas of the world, or you had a globe in the classroom, what this means is we went 155 times around the equator. We fly 125 sorties or legs every day. I've already mentioned that we last year, we in the rolling 12 months, we've served 1,500 different organisations. That excludes all the individuals. So, for example, in Nigeria, it's not uncommon for a government minister of Nigeria to come along and ask us to fly us to a particular part of Nigeria. I won't comment on the fact that he prefers not to use Nigerian Airlines, but there we go. It says up there, 1,000 destinations in 24 countries. Well, as I've already said, we fly in more, but we don't publicise it. 1,000 destinations? Those are 1,000 places that have a name. Where are you going today? I'm going to that place. We actually fly to about 2,500 locations. A few minutes ago, I said, imagine a place where there is nothing. For thousands of miles, there is nothing. My daughter last year, year before last, 2 years ago, went to Namibia. No, it wasn't. Botswana, I'll get it right in a minute. On a riding holiday, in the middle of nowhere. And when they flew in, all there was a rough strip. No buildings, nobody to meet them apart from the Land Rover that came over. Nothing. You know, you really got to empty your minds what nothing means. So we fly to 2,500 locations that are not even named. They're just somewhere over there and there's a rough enough strip good enough to get in. This is completely mind-boggling to what we understand. You know, we go for a long walk round here up on Dartmoor. Well, you're never really going to get lost because you only have to walk about 3 miles in any direction. You'll hit a road or something you'll recognise. Out there, there is nothing. So what I'm trying to get across to you is literally the loneliness of the place. So our pilots, when they fly into these places, if something's wrong with the aircraft, they've suddenly become the engineer. And if they suddenly come up and you're in Papua New Guinea, you've got the local head of the tribe coming up in all his war paint and carrying his spear and with all his feathers around him, and he's got a cob on about something and he's shaking his fist and shaking his... All of a sudden, you are now a diplomat. And all of a sudden, you've now got to mollify him and find out what the problem is. You never know, within reason, what you're going to walk into. You haven't got a clue. So I know we complain in this country about potholes. But here we have Liberia. Now, I apologise in advance. I was brought up on Imperial. So if anybody wants a metric conversion, you can see me afterwards. In the UK, we get about 39 inches of rain a year. I think half of it came this morning. Here we have Liberia. And in 6 months, they get 179 inches. Hence, the road opens up and it swallows lorries. Now, those lorries will literally stay there until the ground gets hard enough for somebody to come along with a crane and pull them out. Because in Liberia, there was one road going through the capital, Monrovia, and all the rest of it is like that. Now, we fly small planes, carry up to 12 people, or the equivalent of cargo. So are we going to carry what they carry? No, we're not. But what we can do is get places very quickly. What is going to take you 3, 4, 5 days across those types of tracks in a vehicle, swollen rivers, broken banks, bridges swept away, this is all increasing your time getting somewhere, we'll get you there in half an hour to an hour. So we can carry much lighter loads very quickly. So vaccines, somebody needs, there's a polio outbreak, where do they need it? Right, there's 5,000 files in the back of the aircraft, gone. That's the sort of thing that we can do quickly to save life. So here is a clinic in Kenya. And eye specialists spent 5 days diagnosing 295 cases, And the best result that they had was a grandmother called Habiba, who saw her grandchildren for the first time after they'd had an operation. Fantastic. So MAF, as an airline, is an enabler. Now, there's a good management word for a Sunday morning. What on earth do we mean by enabling? Well, there are lots of British medical staff who give up a week of their holiday a year to go and work in places that they can do some good. So imagine this, you're going to Africa and you've flown on a 11-hour flight. Let's face it, if you've flown 10 or 11 hours, you're pretty tired anyway. And now you get out and you get into a Land Rover and you're now going to go for a day and a half like this. And you're already tired and you're being thrown about like this because the roads are absolutely awful. And so that's another day and a half. So that's 2 days out of seven. And you'll probably lose a day and a half in the end. That's 3.5 days out of seven. That's 50% of your time spent travelling or recovering. Now imagine you get off the aircraft, you get into a beautiful MAF aircraft, you fly for a maximum of an hour, still day one, a bit jet lagged after the flight, but you're okay. Day one, you start to work. When you're coming back, it's only half a day, so maybe that's a maximum of a day out of seven that you've lost. Now you're working 6 days, not 3.5. That's what we mean by we enable other people to use their skills, to use their talents to the best effect, because we can get people there quickly. That's what we can do. Direct your children onto the right path, and when they're older, they will not leave it. So, when your kids come home from school, or when you still had your kids at home, how was school today, dear? Right. But the flight was great. So here we are, once a week, once a month, we will fly children from villages, so they'll walk all the way to this focal point. It might be a day, might be a 2 day walk from their village to this airstrip. We put them on the plane and they fly to school. And they might be there for the whole term, or we might be doing it weekly. So we provide education for those. This is naturally too much different to what still goes on in the UK. You've got the Channel Islands, you've got Island of Alderney, where sixth formers are flown out. You've got the Hebridean Islands in Scotland, where a lot of children are flown out weekly or monthly or by the term. So it's not a million miles different, but now we're doing it in remote places. So, I've just touched on it really, what's the one thing that every parent wants to have for their kids? Education. How do we get to that point? So what's one of the people that we flow out, types of people we fly out, are agronomists. There's a lot of places around the world are doing what we did 400 years ago in the Middle Ages here, which was subsistence farming, subsistence living, barely enough to live on. And that's what a lot of places are. So we fly out an agronomist who can show them how to grow better crops, more crops. So now they've got enough to feed themselves, and now they've got a surplus which they put on an aeroplane. We then take it to a regional market. We sell it, we take the money back to them. And what do they do then? They will then start bringing in teachers, bringing in buildings. And so the cycle goes round. It's about betterment for themselves, their families, and their communities. And where we fit in is by flying the right people with the right knowledge to where it's needed and produce out. So what do you normally do when Anthony's into one of his long sermons and it's coming near lunchtime? You all start looking at your watch and you go, oh, I hope he doesn't go on today. I've got Barbara and Joe coming for lunch today. I need to get the roast in. Oh dear, yeah. So it's lunchtime, it's 1 o'clock, and there's a phone call. And there's this young lady who's in labour. it would literally take 36 hours, and she's been in labour 24 hours, there's a complication. It would take 36 hours by road, by bus, by boat, to get anywhere near a hospital. Mike and Nikki Duncalf, who work for MAF, Mike a pilot, get the call, can you help? We're now into what we call a medevac, a medical evacuation, an emergency. The aircraft is in the air within 15 minutes. Within half an hour, they have arrived to where this woman is. Now, you remember earlier on, I talked about weight and balance. Well, what you've got in this photograph is the lady on the left, who's the district nurse. She knows MAF. She knows the drill. She's already weighed the patient. So the patient is put on the aircraft. It's flown to a hospital, emergency cesarean. Oh, by the way, the gentleman who's with her doesn't fly with her. Why? Because where they are, if the family turn up with the patient, the family are expected to pay. So he mysteriously disappears. So she's kept at home, baby's born. The only ones from the local Anglican church who are really supporting her are Mike, Nikki Duncalf, and a few others. But she's fine, you know, she's got the baby, it's healthy, she's all stitched up. A few days, we fly her back. And the nice ending in this story is she called the baby Nikki. But this is just atypical of what goes on. Medevacs happen all the time. Now, we don't turn up and say, oh, have you got any insurance? You got any money? We'll fly you after that. No. This is life or death. And I don't mean to be dramatic here, overly dramatic here, but we are literally talking life or death. No flight, death for her and the baby. Period. So we go and get them. We do have the skilled surgeons at local regional hospitals do the operation. Now, a few days later, we'll go back, or a week or so later, we'll go back and say, can you make a contribution towards that? Now, why do we do that? The answer is to stop any Tom, Dick and Harry using us as a free taxi service. You want to go somewhere? Oh, tell MAF you've got a bellyache. That's fine, they'll fly you. It's to stop misuse. So that's what we do. Just touching on the money side, we are a commercial organisation. So I mentioned the Nigerian minister. We'll charge him full commercial whack. All the charities who say, right, Haiti, it's been hit by a cyclone. We've got to get somebody in quick. Any major charity, when they've got a relief required, part of what they do will be a logistics. So we'll charge them a shade over cost. And then anywhere in between. But of course, that doesn't really cover everything we do. It costs, depending on the fuel price, and it's quite a wide gap, but it costs anywhere between 70 and 110 million a year to run MAF. It depends what the fuel costs are around the world, because we're buying on the spot market anywhere around the world. Just as an aside for the more technically minded, nearly all our aircraft run on jet fuel. Even though they're piston engines, they run on jet fuel. Why? Because ordinary gasoline, almost same as the petrol that you get at the pump for your car, is becoming more difficult to get around the world. So we've changed them all to jet fuel. But it costs 70 to 110 million a year. Now, a good part of that comes from, we're a commercial airline, we charge. But the most of it will come from giving, like you, and from around the rest of the world. It's your love, support, prayers, and financial support that keeps us in the air doing what we can do. Sometimes life gets nasty. Here we are in Sudan. What's going on in Sudan? A war. You've probably seen it on the news. It's flared up. This particular camp is Renik Transit Camp, and it has 3.1 million people. It's a bit like me saying we fly 6.1 million miles, kilometers around the world. What the heck does that mean? So I went on the internet, and this is true. Imagine, for a moment, all the people from Glasgow, Cardiff, Belfast, and Manchester. Just imagine all those cities empty, like one of those horrible futuristic films where mankind has gone and wiped himself out. But just imagine those four cities empty, as though you're walking or driving through them. There's nothing there. You add up those four, Glasgow, Cardiff, Belfast, Manchester, that equals 3.1 million people. Now you begin to get the size of the issue that we've got here. So we fly in flights to take things. We fly in passengers, cargo. This is happening in the world now. We are all fed whatever BBC, ITV and one or two others decide to feed us. And at the moment, we are mostly consumed with Gaza and Ukraine. Well, I can tell you this has been going on for a lot longer. And it's still going on now. And we are involved. Jesus drew near them and said unto them, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Go then to all peoples everywhere and make them my disciples. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and I will be with you always to the end of the age. That's Matthew 28. So who these days, if you pictured, I should say, a true missionary, what's the picture you get? I know what I get. I get the, what's his name? It's the film, The African Queen. Robert Morley is the elder brother of Catherine Hepburn, who's gone out in the 1800s, where he's teaching them not only the Christian faith, but also, I'm going to teach you to be British. Doesn't work, by the way. Doesn't work these days, by the way. You have to go and immerse yourself in the culture. You have to go and understand the language, the nuances, the behaviours, the signs, the movements. We all do it here. It's second nature to us. Now you're going to somewhere you've never lived before, with people you've never seen before, never heard before, and you've got to go and fit in. Yeah. Well, thankfully, people do. So here's this wonderful lady called Mayo Suk, and she has spent the last 20 years as a missionary living with this group of Anu, and she has translated the New Testament into the Kotiak language. 2,000 copies of the New Testament for this one tribe with this one dialect of a language has been translated. By the way, they were printed in China, but I find that amusing. And they were taken here so that they can have a printed copy of the Word of God in their hands, in their own language, for the first time. Now, when was the first time we got... I want an answer from you, Mark. When was the first time we got printed Bibles in this country? 400 years ago? About 400 years ago, we got them in this country. Therefore, you want a Bible? I don't mean this cheaply, but they're sort of 10 a penny. You can go to any shop and or online, you can pick them up. If you happen to be one of a few hundred people, a few thousand people, of this Anu tribe, well, number one, you haven't got Amazon. But number two, nobody has ever translated the Bible into your own dialect, your own language. And there are people like this. We know a couple who live in Nepal for Wycliffe Bible Translators, and they've spent 30, 40 years out there. But they've got a little bit of a way to go until this company couple. These are the Ellenbergers. So with that name, they're bound to be American. They're both now aged 88. And they literally went, they met. Boy meets girl, girl meets boy, fall in love, get married. Oh, by the way, I'm a missionary. Do you like fancy coming in the living in the middle of nowhere for the rest of your life, for Papua New Guinea? Yeah, sure. So here they are, 60-odd years later, translating the whole Bible, again, for a small tribe on the top of a mountain, and they have spent their entire life. I mean, they're not there literally 64 years. They've had a family. They've flown in and out. That's what we are supporting them in what they do. But when they went there, they said, oh, we're moving in there. Can you fly in? And we said, well, maybe. Said, where are you? Oh, we're at the top of that mountain up there. Oh, right. Anything in the way? Yeah, there's a big rock in the middle of the runway. So bearing in mind health and safety wasn't what it was 60-odd years ago, we gave them sticks of dynamite. And they literally, over the next few months, blew it up, took it away, leveled the runway, and we flew in. That is the sort of thing that we still do today. I mean, when you've got, I said to Anthony beforehand, I said, you've got a wonderful runway here. I'm going to use it. So when a MAF pilot comes in anywhere in the world, well, apart from, say, a regional, proper regional airport, if you've ever been to an airport, you've seen the numbers on the end of the runway, yeah? So at Cambridge, where I fly from, you've got 23 at one end and 05 at the other. So 23 is 230, and the 05 is 050, but we don't put the last north on. And what are they are? They're the compass heading. So 360 degrees in a compass. So 23 is sort of southwestish. 230. 05, t'other way. Sort of northeast. Now, where you're flying to a place of nowhere with nothing, there are no numbers on the end of the runway. And so what they do, they don't come into land, they come down, and where does the pilot sit? On the left. So they'll go to the right of the runway so I can look down. I'm looking down the whole time because I'm now lassoing the runway. I'm now going round it. And what am I looking for? I'm looking for any object that might damage me, first and foremost, me, never mind the aircraft, me, and make an unsafe landing. So what things am I looking for? Already mentioned, it's the rainy season. The river's gone run it. There's a boulder sticking out. There's a dead carcass of an elephant. I jest not. The best one was a pilot had lassoed and he was coming into land. And of course, you're coming into land, so you close the throttle. The engine's quiet. And halfway down the runway, an elderly gentleman on a bicycle came in and turned left to go in the same direction that the aircraft was coming in. So in those situations, as a good bit of airmanship, you do a thing called a go-around, okay? How does a go-around go? You whack the throttle right open, which he did, right over the head of the elderly gentleman. I gather the gentleman didn't do it again. But those are the sorts of things. Yeah, I mean, are they used to aircraft? No. Have they ever been around an airfield? No. Why on earth would they know that you don't go on an active airfield? You know, don't presume people know. So that's another reason why we do a lasso, to make sure that it is okay to land. Here we are. I mentioned earlier on the Halo Trust. We fly them in and out. So, in Angola, the Angolan War, another war we have forgotten about, 10 million landmines were laid, of which, at the time this was taken, only 100,000 had been removed. Turn that round the other way. There are still 9.9 million landmines sitting in the ground. And you've got small ones, which are anti-personnel mines. If one of those goes off and you're about 10 feet away, you'll probably be okay, but you'll get a few bits of shrapnel. Underneath it, sometimes, they put about 6 kilograms, and that's an anti-tank mine. You only go, that goes off anywhere near you, curtains. So you are dealing with extremely dangerous munitions that are just inertly sitting in the ground, still active, waiting for someone or something to trigger them. So we have these incredibly brave people who go around and all they're doing is scanning every piece of ground and marking it with posts when they find a landmine for somebody else to come along and remove them. the bottom right-hand picture, that was taken a week after this chap had lost his middle finger whilst picking up something in the ground. It's going on now. So why do they like MAF? Transport. We can get people in and out to remote places very, very quickly. They don't need much equipment, so we can carry it. But when something like the bottom right-hand corner happens, or something goes off and somebody gets splattered with shrapnel up their leg, it's an emergency phone call. It's a medevac, because we've got to get them to a hospital to get them treated. That's why they like MAF. Because we can get them out of... we are taking them into trouble of their own volition, but we can get them out of trouble when they jolly well need it. So, Mozambique. This is slightly older, last year. Terror attacks. Already mentioned that one of our pilots had been wrongfully arrested. So here you've got a situation partnering with another airline, Ambassador Aviation. We flew flights to get 1,000 refugees out. What was happening? There was a clash between government and other forces. The other forces had come into a village, were literally shooting up everything. You can see in this picture, this is women with children. Why? Because all the men are dead. They've been shot, they're lying in the streets. This is like an invading army coming in again. So, what are they more terrified of? The fact that the terrorists are coming in, the guns are going off, the fact that their loved ones are now lying dead in the street, the fact that they are fleeing with all they've got on their backs and carrying their children, the fact that they are now going in this tin can called an aircraft to be flown out. And those are noisy. There are no headphones, you see. Those are noisy. They've seen an aircraft, maybe. They've never been in one. And now they're being flown hundreds of miles to a refugee camp where they've got no money and they don't speak the language and they're now living in a tent if they're lucky. So tell me which bit they're scared about. Sorry, that's going on in the world now. And this is where MAF pilots put themselves in danger. So, thousands of communities are cut off. You can see jungle, mountains, desert, swamp, conflict, disaster. If you wanted to get from where these people are to that peak in the background, you'd have to go chop down the valley. There's no path. So you get your machete out and you're cutting your way through the jungle, avoiding the spiders and the snakes along the way. You'd have to sleep a night or two in the jungle, and then you've got to climb all the way up the other side. If, however, there's an airstrip here and there's an airstrip over there, what's that? 2-3 minute flight? That's the difference that an aircraft can make in this type of situation. Because these are the people that we are serving. These are the isolated. These are the lost. Now, because of modern technology, these are not ignorant people. Because they've now got phones or satellite phones, and you can get TV if they've got the power. So they're not completely isolated, but they are still living hand to mouth like we in this country did 300-400 years ago. Those are the people that we're serving. Now, this to me is fun, okay? If anybody, my darling wife can listen to this, for my Christmas and birthday present, if you can wrap together for me to be able to go to a place like this where I can bomb down like a helter-skelter, yeah, to me that's fun. You won't catch me doing a bungee jump or a parachute jump, but coming down a mountain like that is tremendous fun for me as a pilot. So this is called a one-way runway. Fairly obvious reasons. You land going uphill, you turn around at the top, and you bomb down the hill, and you hope you're going fast enough, because what you don't see in that photograph is the 4,000 foot drop at the end of the runway. I'm sorry, I'm a bit mad like that. I just love it. I'm also an instructor as well, so I do take pilots up who have already got licenses and want to become better, and I put them into a spiral descent. I'll distract them and just shove the nose down and say, right, get out of that. I'm supposed to simulate a passenger who doesn't know any better. But that's the sort of thing. So that's the reason why this sort of thing appeals to me. But, you know, joking aside, and apart from my self-indulgence for a few moments, see those people up there? That's why we do it. These are people who have a barrier called a mountain and jungle in between them and anybody else. They are, in effect, trapped there. They don't have any form of transport. They are completely isolated. Okay, I've already mentioned that they can now get phones or the internet in some places. And they are completely trapped in poverty. Who's going to trade with them? What resources have they got up there? You're not exactly going to have a, you know, a herd of cows up there that you can milk and sell the milk from. You're not exactly going to grow loads of crops on top of this mountain. So frankly, who cares? And that is the problem. Because there are a lot of people in isolation around the world with nothing to offer a government in terms of finance, in terms of economy, in terms of contributing. There's nothing there. So what do they care? And this is where the Christian love of MAF, and you saw a whole load of other charities as well that we fly, can start going and doing outreach to these people to save them spiritually, but also help them socially. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye. That's what the Lord has told us to do. So, now unfortunately the videos aren't playing today, so that's the reason why I haven't shown you any. So I'm going to move on. But we are currently doing a specific fundraising campaign for the Maasai tribe in South Africa and Lesotho. Why is it important? You are dealing with people who, again, are living in poverty. You are dealing with people where, particularly young women, are a burden. You are dealing with young women where 30% of them, by the time they start their menstrual cycle, will be sold to an older gentleman in the next village. And they are still physically developing, which means 43% of them will probably die in childbirth. That is going on now. So what we're doing is working with other charities and schools to be able to raise money, to be able to give them a school which is safe. They're not going to be sold. They're going to be given an education, something otherwise the girls would never get. They're going to be given protection as they grow, until they come to a point where they can, with encouragement and love, go out into the bigger, wider world. So we are doing a lot of work with these at the moment. That's what we tend to do now. We raise money for MAF generally, because we've got all these pilots to pay, all these engineers, all these radio operators to pay. But also, we can bring focus to very specific areas. So, it's more than an aeroplane. If you've noticed today, you've seen very few aircraft in the pictures. That's deliberate. Because an aircraft is an aircraft. It's like a car is a car. It's what you do with it that makes the difference. By the way, the one on the right, that is called a Kodiak. That's a fairly recent, in the last 5-7 years, development in the States. They cost $2.5 million, brand new. And last year, somebody in the States gave us $5 million, and so we bought 2 new aircraft. And I did mention a Cessna Caravan earlier on. That's the one on the left. You can see a huge pod which we put cargo in. And I haven't got the video to show you today, but there's one lovely bit. Over here in this country, you know, quite rightly, we're very much into animal welfare. So any animal gets transported, it has to be done absolutely right. Out here in Africa, I've got a wonderful piece of film where they've got a pig, they've bound its legs up, they've literally shoved it in the hold and flown it. So, you know, a little bit different, but it goes on. I talked about it being an ambulance, medevacs, save lives. It's a toolbox. So just one thing to think about here. I mentioned that if you sell your crops and you've got a surplus, what you want, education for your kids, and you get a teacher, but you need a school. Now, just for a moment, look around this building, okay? Imagine this as a school in a place that has nothing. What have you got? You've got windows, you've got a roof, you've got lights, you've got doors, you've got hinges, you've got nuts, you've got bolts. Every single piece of the building has to be flown in. That is what we do as well. So it's a school and food delivery. I've put on some of the chairs something that you can sign and fill out to us, because we'd like you to support us either prayerfully or by financial support. And there's some books as well, which my wife will be looking at after over there. So what do we want you to do? We want you to pray, volunteer, donate. Last thing on the list, postcards. Who here has still got a few boxes of postcards that have been sent over the years? Bet you have somewhere. We trade them on the internet. And there's a pastor down in Bungay in Norfolk who sends 30 to 40,000 a year for trading postcards. So if you have them, please give them to Anthony. He'll give them to my mother-in-law and we will get them up to us. So last slide. Technology and aviation are only the tools. It is the people that we seek to serve. On the bottom of this banner, you'll see here, it says, bringing help, hope, and healing. And that is, we put it on there because that's what we're told. Whenever the communities see an aircraft with the MAF logo on the tail, like in that picture there, they tell us, they know that there is help, hope, and healing coming on that aircraft for their community. And that is what we do. That's almost bang on 12 o'clock. So thank you very much indeed.